Yo, 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 what's goody? It is Bear in the building. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Queen Talk, everyone. Today's special guest is a graduate from Friends University who is now a Lau orchestra teacher and the vice president of the Wichita Asian Association. Please welcome Panya Ampon.
Yeah, hi.
Hello.
Oh, thank you. Gosh. I'm so excited to be here. This is like, I'm pumped. I'm a fan. Fangirling. I'm like really excited to be here. This is, I don't know, this is so exciting. Like the work that you're doing, I said it earlier, but I was like, the work that you're doing with this podcast, like here in the heart of Kansas, like it means a lot. Like I think that not a lot of people understand like representation is important, and to have a podcast like this, like, is awesome. Like, yeah. I'm super excited.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on here and joining me. And like you said, in the heart of Kansas, we already know how Kansas is. We'll get into that. But yeah, please introduce yourself. Let everyone know who you are.
Yeah, so my name is Panya Ampon. I am a first generation Lau American born and raised here in Wichita, Kansas. So my family immigrated from Laos back in the 80s. And so, let's see, my pronouns are he, him. And I think, like, I would consider myself somebody who I want to be the change. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, yeah, be the change, be the change. And I really, truly think that in order to be the change, you have to, like, fully embody it. You can't just be the change. You have to embody change. And, like, change looks so dynamic, and it's not just linear, right? Like, mm-hmm. like especially when we're talking about progress. And so I tell my kids that a lot. But yeah, I don't know. I'd be like, maybe I'm a change maker. Maybe that's what I said earlier. Like, maybe I'm a change maker.
Yeah. You know? So you don't like to say you're gay or pansexual or bisexual, part of the community. The change maker is how you like to say it. Why do you think you like came to those terms? And
I mean, like, I do identify as gay, but I think that for me, I kind of say, like, I identify as gay, but I really think that it shouldn't matter what my sexual orientation is. Mm. It shouldn't matter whether I'm male or female or how I identify or what my gender is, specifically for the fact that, like, if there's a need that needs to be filled, somebody has to fill it, and it doesn't matter who is filling it. And I think that that's something not a lot of people understand. It's like a lot of queer advocacy is like not us trying to make people queer. It's like us trying to make a space for ourselves so that we can fit in and help fill these voids.
Yeah, I like that. That's very well put. We kind of get like caught up in our own little boxes that we check off for ourselves and stereotyping, and we don't always have to come into a space and be like, I'm gay, like this is who I am,
right?
And just my abilities is my abilities, whether I'm a male, female, so like gay or not, like I totally understand what you mean by that. What got you to that point to be like, I'm a change maker. I don't want to be this one person in this space. Like, what got you to that space?
I think for me, like, I don't know, as a gay person growing up in Wichita, it's something to where I have never really felt like I had a place, right? And I think that in order to make a place for myself, I kind of became that change maker that I'm talking about, right? Like, I think that I've created, like, every place that I go, I create a space for myself. Whether it's because I do declare that I am gay or it's because I declare that this is going to be my space, I am going to reside here whether you like it or not. You know, like, I went to Friends University, Christian College. Like, it wasn't necessarily frowned upon, but was not necessarily accepted by everybody on campus.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is a Christian-affiliated university in a traditional sense, right? It's like non-denominational, but Quaker-founded. So there are some people there who are super progressive about their Christianity, and there's some people who aren't. And as somebody who, I didn't grow up religious, for me, I had to create a space for somebody who, I was just there to get my education, you know, mm-hmm. like a quality education, and they happened to provide one, but there wasn't a space for somebody who was queer, who was Asian. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of, there was not a lot of color on, up on that campus, I'm gonna tell you that. And I just had to pave the way for myself. And yeah. so I think that's kind of like, for me, when I started, I like in college is when I started identifying as like myself as like a change maker, because it's, maybe it's a space maker, right? Like making a space.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not even a change maker. It's a space maker.
Yeah. And so at Friends University, you mentioned it, like it not being very many people of color. How did you navigate that space on at Friends University?
It was hard to kind of navigate it in the sense of like, I was one of the only Asian people there. Mm-hmm. Not to mention I was like one of, if not the only Lao student on that campus.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, it, Friends University is like high school on steroids. It's like high school yeah. 2.0 because it's the size of the campus and the size of the students is like so small. And so for me, navigating that space looked a little different. I didn't want to be like labeled as like the token Asian or like the token gay, mm-hmm. because oftentimes I was the token Asian or the token gay in whatever group I was in yeah. or where I was at. So navigating that space, I had to really like stand my ground in the sense of like, no, that comment was kind of racist, or like, oh no, that comment was kind of offensive. Like, just because I'm your gay friend doesn't mean you're going to make gay comments, or like, just because I'm your Asian friend doesn't mean you get to hawk off in an Asian accent or like whatever the heck you think you're doing, you know? So I don't know. Navigating that space took a lot of, and a lot of my friends were very supportive, right? Like a lot of my friends, once they understood the boundaries, like they were like, oh yeah, like got you. Like, I'm not going to do that in front of you again. Or, but it's one of those things where you have to be the educator, which mm-hmm. I mean, I am a teacher, which is kind of nice, but like you have to educate the people around you even when it's uncomfortable.
Yeah. So I like, that's what you mean by space maker, because you are bold enough to say in that moment, like, that wasn't right. Don't right. say that. And that's very courageous of you. I know, like, for me personally, I sometimes will say it in the moment, right? Like, but then sometimes I'll go home and I'll be like, man, I should have said something. I should have stood up for... Maybe it wasn't even like something to do with me, but sometimes it is like something to do with like me personally and my identity. And I just didn't say something in that moment. And I'm just like, it eats at me sometimes. I'm just like, I should have said something. So like now more times than not, I'm trying to be like, if like in the moment, making them uncomfortable, because it does like, and it may be, oh, you're overthinking it or whatever. And that's what some people say, but it's like, you don't have to go through it.
Right.
So you don't have to sit with it and understand, like, if I don't say something, I'm going to feel away. So yes. I might as well say something. So maybe the next time you don't repeat yourself. So I like that, being a space maker, mm-hmm. and whatever space you go into, they know, like, you're not going to say certain types of things. So,
right.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, a lot of us, especially as queer people of color, like, for me, I am afraid of confrontation a lot of times, right? And I hate to say that it's a colored people, like I'm not colored in the sense like I'm black, but I am somebody who has a little bit more melanin in them. And I will say, like, I think that our parents raised us in a way that was kind of like, do what I say, right? And I don't know if that's true in all, and like, I find that as a common theme between my friends of color, right? Like, I see, like, oh, like, my parents were super strict. Like, they had, like, it was my way or the highway, mm-hmm. and very authoritarian kind of with their mm-hmm. with their parenting style. And my parents are a lot more lax than, like, a traditional Asian parents, you know, okay. quote in quotations. But mm-hmm. I think that it causes us to be afraid of confrontation because we don't want to start conflict, right? And so being... as a queer person of color, being comfortable with speaking up and speaking out is so hard. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I didn't learn until way later in life. Because like you said, like there'll be instances where even still where I go and I'm like, shit, I should have said something. I should have mm-hmm. stopped the discrimination, or I should have mm-hmm. jumped in there and been that person. But it's so hard mm-hmm. to be that.
Yeah, it is, especially when it happens a lot. Like, and it could just be like little things too. Like, it doesn't even have to be like a big thing, but one thing in particular that brings it to mind is just like when someone's telling a story and they bring race into the story, when race doesn't need to be brought into the story. And I'm just like, and that's what I'm thinking, like, okay, but if I say, why does the race matter? It's awkward.
Yeah.
It's awkward. So it's just like, that's the first thing that came to mind. But, I think that's just one of the little situations that happens when, stories are being told or people are talking and you just don't want to be the person that's just like, that shouldn't be said because
It's not needed. And that's hard for people on both sides. Like, it's hard for people who, like, they're trying to be advocates for the queer color community, and then they're like, they're advocates to a fault sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, they like, they're allies, but then they're like, oh yeah, I'm gonna make everything about race, or I'm gonna make everything about that. And sometimes it's like, we don't need that attention. Like, it's kind of like the opposite. It's like they advocate and they push so hard to make sure everybody feels included and welcome, but in doing that they've actually excluded us as a community, which is kind of perplexing in a way, because it's like a paradox, but at the same time, where is that threshold?
And you mentioned, like, your excuse me, you mentioned your family and they're more lax. What was your upbringing like?
That's really interesting. My upbringing was multi-generational household. So, like, my mom's parents lived with us, and then my parents, and then my siblings and I.
Okay.
And then, and oftentimes, like, earlier in my childhood, because my mom is the oldest of her siblings, you know, my aunts and uncles would live with us and their kids or whatever it was. And my grandma, she retired early, and she raised us, like, she was the stay-at-home mom because we had a multi-generational household. And so then everybody besides my grandma went to work. And so it was really interesting. Like, she used to work. And then, like, once more grandkids were born, she was like, yo, I'm going to retire and I'm going to take care of everybody. And it's not like that in every home. So we're very fortunate that my grandma took that upon herself, which obviously staying home is, like, hard. Like, you know, being a stay-at-home, anybody is hard. But, growing up was very interesting because my family, like I said, was not super religious. But a lot of, like, Laotian traditions stem from Buddhism. And so we would still, like, go to temple, whatever. But then, like, I also had a little bit of dabbling in, like, the Catholic Church because my uncle's wife happens to be Catholic. And so her kids go to Catholic school. And so, like, a little bit of dabbling in that. And so growing up is just kind of like a hodgepodge of religion, no religion, and then also having a very traditional Asian life, because my family immigrated, but, like, when my mom immigrated, she got put into, like, the second grade, so she basically grew up in America.
Okay.
But, like, I mean, she grew up in Laos, but then she, you know, moved over and kind of, like, grew up here in America, so she speaks fluent Laos, but she also speaks fluent English, and she got a college degree and all that stuff. So I'm very fortunate in the sense of, like, my parents grew up in America and had the opportunity to have an education. And so, like, my first language is technically English.
Okay.
Right? I do speak a little bit of Lao, but it's one of those things where it's one of those things where I'm very fortunate, but also, like, it frames my lens of the world in a very unique way, because I have one foot in the door of, like, a traditional Asian household, but then one foot in the door into a very American household, because there's multiple generations in my house. And so it's interesting.
And do you have a lot of siblings, or?
So I'm the oldest of four. Okay. So there's three, I have three younger siblings, two brothers and one half sister.
Okay. And where did you, like, go to school at when you grew up here?
So I went to Seltzer Elementary. Technically, I started in the Catholic Diocese. I went to preschool at St. Thomas Aquinas. And then Catholic Diocese, and then moved over to public school. I went to Seltzer Elementary, Robinson Middle School for the pre-IB program, and then I went to Southeast High School. And then I stayed in town and went to Friends I went to Newman and then Friends for my undergrad.
Okay. When did you become a part of the queer community? Like, when did you open up about that?
That's oh man, this is going on the internet. But no, my so I knew I was, I think it came to my cognition that I was gay in middle school for sure. Like, okay. It was like seventh grade, I was starting to look at boys a little different, you know, even though, like, I masqueraded, I had a girlfriend, like, whatever, right? But it was, like, towards the, like, seventh grade, I might, which is really interesting because my dad actually passed away in seventh grade, which is, like, interesting to my experience. But, like, growing up, and I look back at it now, I'm like, damn, I was gay. I was, like, that bitch was gay. Listen, like, listen to, like, my little, you know, do you remember those hip clips? Like, the little thing where you, like, put the little cartridge into, like, the little boom box. Like, they were, like, keychains and whatever. I don't know. But anyway, hip clips. I'm pretty sure that was what they were called. But all of mine were Britney Spears. Okay. All of them were Britney Spears. I was like, damn, if I didn't know I was... like, all of the CDs that I owned were, like, Shania Twain and freaking Britney and Christina. And, like, I'm like... damn, how did I not know I was gay? How did they not be like, that bitch is gay right there? But, like, my uncles used to make fun of me. Like, they'd be like, oh, katoy noy, like a little gay, like little gay and loud. And I'd be like, no, I'm not gay. Even though my ass is running around in heels, right? I'm not gay. Like, wrist flicking, whatever. And so, you know, I denied it for a long time. And then I got in seventh grade and my friends were like, oh, you're thinking about boys, you're gay. I didn't know what it was called, right, in English. Okay. I didn't know what it was called in English. I just thought gay was a derogatory term because people would be like, oh, that's gay. Right, you know, like, yeah. I'm like, oh, no, I'm not gay. But then I, like, really came to terms with, like, oh, no, like, gay is, like, not a bad thing. It's just, it's a sexual orientation, and I just happen to be gay. But my parents, my mom specifically, when she immigrated over with the church. And so my mom actually, when she was young, she was baptized, and like the church, she grew up in Garden City. And so like the church van would like pick them up and like take them to church every Sunday and like whatever, even though because my grandparents were working. Mm-hmm. And so the church van would take them to work or church and take care of them and whatever. My mom got baptized and all this stuff. And so when I first started expressing that I was outwardly gay, my mom was like,
God. In seventh grade?
Oh, like, well, like, kind of like in early high school. Okay. Yeah, so like end of eighth grade, okay. Beginning of whatever, my mom was like, God made man and woman to be together. Your dad would be rolling in his grave if he found out. And because my dad had passed away from leukemia. And so she was like, yeah, your dad would be rolling in his grave and stuff. But my mom remarried my freshman year of high school. So things kind of like shifted in that dynamic. But I love my mom. She's very, very supportive. But initially she was like, hell no, like, you're not gonna be gay, not my son.
What did that do for your guys' relationship in that moment?
It was, I'm not gonna lie, it didn't help our relationship. I don't think it like necessarily hindered it, but it was very, we just didn't talk about it, like, don't ask, don't tell.
Okay, but you still were interested, yeah, in boys and like, oh, were you, for like, sure, dating boys and stuff too at the time?
Or? I kind of, because my mom was not approving of it, I didn't want to get kicked out of my house. And so I didn't say I suppressed it. I just didn't outwardly come out to any adult figures in my life, like, okay, teachers or whatever. I didn't come out to anybody until my senior year of high school. Okay. And it was like then my friends all knew, whatever, like everybody knew I was gay. But also in high school, I really tried to push it down. So like overcommitted myself and did a bunch of work so that I would not have to think about my sexuality. Like, it sounds terrible, but I repressed it a lot. Not saying that I was repressing being gay, but I repressed talking about being gay. Mm-hmm. All through high school. Like, people would be like, you're gay? I'm like, no, I'm just a little fruity. Like, you know, yeah, like, I wouldn't talk about it. And like, but we all knew, like, if there was no hiding it, I was fucking fabulous. So yeah, there was no, I don't know. I just, yeah, I repressed it.
Yeah. When you were in that moment of, you said like, you were just like over doing things in like high school. What did you, like, what do you mean by that? Like,
I was involved in so much. Like, I did choir, orchestra, swim team, like, whatever, like, I did so much competitions, honor societies, like K-pop club, like, there's just like all these different extracurricular activities that I would just like throw myself into, and I'd be overcommitted, and it was just kind of wild.
Yeah. Did your grandparents say anything to you?
My coming out to my grandparents was actually really funny. It didn't actually happen until recently. Okay. It actually didn't happen for like, until like, what, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, right after COVID. It was kind of wild because We were sitting at breakfast. It was at breakfast. Uh-huh. And we were sitting at breakfast, and I was looking to buy a house at the time because, you know, rates were really nice around, like, right after COVID. People, the housing market was whatever. And so, you know, we're looking around for a house, and my grandpa and my mom, they're, like, all up in my house shopping business because they know properties, and I was new to the game. Mm-hmm. So they'd gone house shopping with me, and everything that I liked, my parents, my mom and my grandpa hated. Yeah. They were like, no, that's bad. No, that's bad. No, you don't need this. No, you don't need that. Oh, no, that's no good. No good. You know, like, they just say no good a lot. I'm like, damn, like, I like that house, you know? And so I would be like, I was complaining to my grandma. I was like, oh, grandma, I just want this house. I just want to buy a house. I just want to move out. Like, and my grandma was like, oh, you know, when you find a wife and you, like, she was like, oh, you can find a wife and you're going to move in with her. Or, like, you guys can live with us for a little while until you save up money and you guys get married, you save up money, and then you guys can build your own house. And my mom looks her dead in the eye. She looks her dead in the eye. She goes, mom, he's not going to marry a woman. He's gay. And my grandma goes, huh? Like, she was like, she like looked at my mom. She's like, and my grandpa's like sitting in the corner, like laughing. Like, and I've never explicitly come out to my grandpa, but I ain't shy about, like, maybe bringing a boy over and, like, you know, cuddling and watching a movie. I'm not shy about it. Ain't nobody hiding it, you know? And I was living with them at the time, you know, and my grandpa goes, Panya, it's okay. Whatever, like, whatever, as long as you're happy, I don't really care. Like, I don't care if you marry a man, marry a woman. My grandparents were so supportive. Like, my grandma just didn't know. Like, she did not connect the dots.
Yeah.
And my grandpa was like, oh, I don't care. Like, gay people, like, apparently, and I did not know this, in, like, Laos or in Thailand or whatever, gay people they're still looked down upon in a way, but they work. My grandpa said that gay people work harder because they have something to prove to their parents. Mm. So, like, when you're gay in Laos or in Thailand, like, more times than not, those people are the rich ones or the more successful ones because they have worked so hard to get their parents' approval. And a lot of Asian people equate money to success because they equate money to stability.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, like, all these billionaires, millionaires, whatever, in Thailand and Laos, they are gay because they've worked so hard to, like, prove it. And so my grandpa was like, I don't care if you're gay or whatever. As long as you're happy, that's all that matters to me. Yeah. And my grandma, she didn't talk about it for a hot second, but she, you know, she's met my boyfriend. She loves my boyfriend.
Okay.
And, like, they're very supportive. Like, my grandparents are very, very supportive. And my mom came around, but thanks to my stepdad. My stepdad was the one who, like, when I came out to him, he was very, like, you know, like, at first, I don't know how, because he's Korean. My stepdad's Korean, so he was very much, like, kind of Christian growing up, because Koreans, a lot of Koreans tend to be Christian. It's, I don't know how that all worked out. I don't know the history of that. But he grew up kind of Christian, and so he was like, oh, you know, like, you're my son. And I call my stepdad my dad. So I was telling my dad. My dad was like, you're my son. I have to love you no matter what. Mm-hmm. And so even he didn't necessarily say that he accepted it, but he said, I have to love you no matter what. And I kind of knew. And my dad's my biggest cheerleader. Like, my dad is my biggest cheerleader. And he supports me. He supports my partner and I. And he's the one that brought my mom around.
Nice. That's good. Now, you're a part of the Wichita Asian Association.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to give everyone, to let everyone know what that is first. It is a nonprofit organization that provides education and understanding of the Asian culture, fosters cooperation among the area of Asian groups, and assists its members to become contributing, respected members of the community. That's your guys' about me.
That's the about. That's our about, man. Actually, hearing that, I'm like, damn, we do all that? I was like, I mean, sometimes I don't feel like, I know we do, but, like, I'm like, damn, we do all that?
Yeah. How do you feel like you've, so you're the vice president of that.
Yeah.
How do you feel like you've had to navigate differently in that space, or do you feel like that organization, the members of that, like, they accept you for who you are too?
I have not faced any discrimination for being queer in that space, and I'm very thankful for that.
Nice.
I think, had this been maybe a few years back in this organization, maybe. I'm not saying that anybody in there is bigoted or biased. Like, don't get it twisted. But I think times have just changed, mm-hmm. right? And especially here in Wichita specifically, I have found, and I don't know if you find this, but like, Wichita has changed a little bit. It's a little bit more progressive than it used to be. It's not a lot more. It's still conservative. It's like very moderate.
Mm-hmm.
But the climate is very moderate. But I think that like this, that space specifically has been very welcoming of all people from all walks of life, because Asians specifically, there are so many ethnicities encompassed in the word Asian. That when we check that box on that, on the, like those demographic forms or whatever, there's only a spot for Asian. Mm-hmm. There's not any sub-demographics for Cantonese, Chinese, Taiwanese. Like there's so many ethnicities of Asian people. Yeah. And so there's already so many minorities within just that Wichita Asian Association space
mm-hmm.
that being a minority as a queer person, I don't think was ever an issue because all minorities are there to be represented and to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's really interesting. And then as the vice president, I will be, it's basically the vice president in our organization serves as the president elect. So like I will be the president in 2 years.
Okay.
And so I think for me, one of my biggest goals when I become president is to create a space. Like again, being that space maker, create a space for queer Asians to gather and feel and be heard and be seen. So mm-hmm. I want to use the Wichita Asian Association as a stepping, not as a stepping stone, but as a organization, like kind of have a jumping off point to start that conversation here in Wichita.
Yeah. Do you feel like you see many Asians that are queer in Wichita?
Like I said, there's so many more queer people, and you know this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can throw a penny down the street and hit a queer person.
Right, yeah.
And the spectrum of queerness is so broad. Mm-hmm. Whether it be gay, lesbian, bi, pan, whatever it is, right? Like, we have so many definitions of queer, but yeah, there's way more than we would expect. And a lot of them are still in the closet, and I'm not trying to out nobody, but like, again, not every family is as accepting as mine.
Right, yeah.
And so I'm very fortunate and very privileged to have a family that supports my queerness.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And like you said, not everybody gets that story. And I don't know how to help fam. Like Queen Talk, I'm hoping like people watch this and like that gives them another way to learn that all families are different, but there are people that are accepting. And I think that we get this sense of like, it's not accepted from the other black people. So I don't want my family to be like that. So I don't want you to be like that, cause I don't want to put a bad name on us, in this group of people. So I don't know if like that's where it stems from or what it is, but I think like I'm privileged too enough to have like a family that was very accepting and who I am. So that it's very nice to have.
I think it's one of those things where in America, we are very individual centric. Like we are very individually focused in the sense of like the way that we operate in our day-to-day lives. Whereas in cultures like in Asian culture and black culture, they're very community based. Like if we go back to like, you know, if we look in African cultures, for example, tribes, right? Like we call them tribes. Mm-hmm. It's like these small knit communities, and perception in small knit communities is so important. Like in Asian culture, it's like, you know, like literally think about like stereotypical Mulan, right? Like, please bring honor to us all. Like, you're gonna shame your ancestors and shame your family by not doing what we ask you to do or not doing what is expected. And so being queer in those spaces is very difficult because it's like what you do reflects upon your upbringing.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to feel like they failed.
Yeah.
And so parents, when they raise somebody queer and they aren't in the mindset of like, this is okay, like they feel like they failed, right? And we see that often even in non-colored spaces. Like we feel like a lot of parents who raise queer kids, they're like, I feel like a failure. I didn't raise my kid. What did I do wrong for my kid to come out queer?
Yeah.
You know? But especially in colored communities, it's so difficult because it's like, you didn't do anything wrong, mom. Mm-hmm. It's like, you didn't do anything wrong that I came out queer. I just happened to be born this way.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of crazy. It's just, man, you bring up some good stuff. Like, I'm like, now it's got my brain thinking.
Yeah. Now you mentioned, you have siblings. Were they like okay with it?
My siblings are so chill. Like, shout out to them. I love those people, man. Like, my two brothers. Oh, one of my brothers is a truck driver, and he's just like, he's the funniest dude. He'd be like, bro, I don't give a rat's ass if you're gay. Don't like just treat people well. I'm like, yo, like, that's the motto.
Yeah.
I don't care what you identify as. Paper bag, frying pan, I don't give a shit. Like, how you identify. But if you're a piece of shit human, I'm going to treat you like a piece of shit human. But if you are a good human, like, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to treat anybody like a piece of shit. But I am saying, like I'm not going to treat nobody like that. But I am going to say, like, I want to be treated well. And I plan on treating you with the same courtesy. It doesn't matter how you identify.
Yeah, treat people how you want to be treated.
But yeah, my siblings are so chill. Like, even my little sister. My sister's like 12, 13. Oh. She's 13 now. Okay. Oh my god, she's 13. She's so old. But she's 13 and she's just like, okay, whatever. Like, she doesn't know. I've been dating boys basically since she was born. So she's like, okay, that's just the norm. But yeah, my brothers both have girlfriends. They're chill. Like,
good. Like, it's a norm. Like, that's... Hopefully, like, that's eventually, like, where we can get. It's just, like, it's just normal for it to happen. It's not, like, this big ordeal.
Yes.
And having to hide yourself because you are. And do you feel like there are spaces in Wichita that you have to hide who you are, or?
I think 160%. I hate to say that. Yeah. I really do. It is very, like, very seldomly nowadays do I feel like I have to hide myself or hide who I am or hide who I'm with. But there are just some places you go where no matter how accepting the space is, the people, you can feel judgment. Like, you can feel the stares, you can feel whatever, because you're being outwardly, you know, gay. And I'm not saying, like, I do not do PDA. Like, we ain't making out in public. That's nasty. Like, I don't care who y'all. I don't care if you're straight, gay, whatever. Don't be making out in public. Nobody wants to see that tongue action. Like, God, that's nasty. But, like, I'm saying, like, there are definitely places where I will go and I will be like, I'm gonna hold your hand. I'm gonna feel comfortable in the space of holding your hand. But I'm gonna feel so uncomfortable this entire time because people just be staring the freak out of me. Like, don't look at me. Like, I'm just trying to enjoy my time with my boyfriend. Yes, we're at a baseball game, but, like, I'm here, you know?
I get what you mean. I totally understand what you're saying. Do you feel like, now you work for the school district, so you're the director of orchestras, and didn't you start a mariachi band?
I did start a mariachi band this
year. That's so awesome. Yeah. That's awesome.
I love it.
Now, I won't give the school out, but you helped the students learn about themselves through music.
Yeah. My philosophy is, I want to empower students to learn about themselves and others, learn about themselves and respect themselves and others through the study of music. Because I, like, my thing is, like, I teach music, sure, but I don't, like, well, I guess my full thing is, I don't teach music. I teach kids through music. Like, I use music as my tool to help raise children.
Nice. And with that, are you open to your kids? Like, I know kids, they're mean. So, like you said, like, they use gay as derogatory all the time. Are you open with your kids that you work with?
Yeah, 110%. There's this vulnerability in music specifically, but, like, in life, there's this vulnerability that we have, right? And as musicians, there's already a vulnerability in the sense of, like, the product that comes out of your voice or your instrument or whatever you're doing, there's a vulnerability there. And I think that in order to create a learning space where my students feel comfortable enough to be themselves and to fully be okay with mistakes and be okay with expressing themselves, I have to be authentic. Mm-hmm. But also kids, and this goes for any profession, kids see through not authentic people.
Mm-hmm.
Kids can see through unauthenticity so quickly. And it's just kind of like, if I wasn't my true self, the kids would tell. But also, like, school is like home for a lot of those kids and for myself, because it's like I spend more time at school than I do at home most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, if I was not comfortable in my own home, I don't know how I would do mentally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the kids have to understand that too. But no, I'm very open about my sexuality. Now, I'm not, well, sometimes I'd be out there and I'm like, I'm gay. Like, I'm not going to, like, whatever problems you have, I'm too gay for that. Like, I'll be trying to line up some chairs and I'm like, I'm too gay to be lining these chairs up straight. Y'all got to fix this for me because I can't be doing it. You know, like, and the kids, you know, I joke about it all the time, but it's one of those things where I don't bring it up in the sense of, like, I'm trying to convert your child. Like, I'm not trying to preach the gay at them, but I'm not going to hide who I am
right
while I'm teaching your child.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a problem with who I am, then you can move your kid to a different school. Like, bye. Like,
yeah.
Like, I'm there to give your kid the best education, no matter what my ethnicity, whatever my gender is, whatever my sexual orientation is, I'm gonna be me and you can figure it the fuck out.
Yeah. Do you see that representation at being in the district for yourself?
I think that it's gotten a lot better. You know, I think I'm the only Asian teacher at my building. I'm the only Asian teacher in my building. I'm not the only teacher of color. Like, yeah, I'm not the only teacher of color. It's very seldom, though. There's not a lot of us. I think I could count the amount of color, like, colored teachers on my hand in my building.
Mm.
And then, but we are a very fruity, or my building is very kind of fruity. And so we do have queer educators in my building. And mm-hmm. Like we said, representation is important. But I think... the district does have a program, like a DEI, kind of like, but like specifically geared towards LGBTQIA plus whatever community in the district. So there is a space for us. I just think that it's underutilized.
Mm.
I think it's, yeah, I think the conversation is not existent, and I think that the space is underutilized for sure.
Do you feel comfortable with obviously being yourself at your school specifically?
I have no problems being who I am at the school. And like I said, if anybody has a problem, girl, go enroll somewhere else. Like, yeah.
Have you ran into any problem?
Nah, nobody. I think that the people, because their kids, and I'm not trying to say that I'm like the bee's knees, but their kids love me. Like, mm-hmm. there's not... I don't have a lot of kids that dislike me,
mm-hmm.
and the ones that do really dislike me, but the kids that stick around with me, they love me, and I'm not trying to be like, you know, toot my own horn or anything, but when parents see that, and they're like, my class is the class they talk about at home, it's really hard for them to be like, oh, we're going to take you away from that teacher because he's gay.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it don't make any sense if my class is what brings them joy.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's good to hear, because... you are open with it, and it's needed. Like, that representation, you have students who are looking up to you that may not be telling you but see you,
mm-hmm.
And maybe they'll have the courage to, like, be open about themselves later on in life. With representation, when was the first time that you seen representation of the community?
In schools or in general?
In general, in life. Like, you're like, oh, this person is gay. I didn't know. Like you said, you didn't know what the word gay was
mm-hmm.
In English. So you found that out when you were younger. But, like, seeing a person who is a part of the community, and you're like, oh, this is what this is.
So I think, I don't know if you had this awakening, but I definitely had a YouTube awakening, like one of those where you would go late at night and be searching up on YouTube, like, how do you know if you're gay? What is, I don't know if you did that, but I did not.
Oh my God, I did not.
I don't know if anybody else relates to that, but when I was younger, I would be on YouTube, like, late at night, like, when nobody was looking, you know, like, on YouTube, on the computer, like, how do you know if you're gay? how do you come out, like, on YouTube? And there's these, like, YouTubers that are, like, out there, like, you know, telling their story, their coming out stories, whatever it is. And, like, there's this YouTuber named Connor Franta, and I still watch his stuff. But, like, he was the first YouTuber who I was like, damn, like, you're gay and you're pretty freaking awesome. And, like, and he talked about his, like, story coming out and, like, how he comes out. And, like, all these YouTubers have these, like, coming out stories on YouTube. And I was just, like, subscribed to their channels and, like, watch it and stuff. And so, you know, I just, like, I think that's kind of where, for me, I, like, first saw representation, because the mainstream media wasn't doing, the mainstream media was not pushing queer content at the mm-hmm. time, right? Like, it was very seldom that you saw a queer couple on TV right. or whatever. Even in real life, I didn't see queer people until I got to high school. Like, I mean, there were queer people.
Southeast, huh?
Mm-hmm. There were queer people in my middle school, but, like, they're just like me. They're just trying to figure it out. Like, ain't nobody know. But, and then you get into high school and you're like, oh, like, that dude's queer, that dude's queer. Oh, they're dating this dude, and dating that dude, and that girl's dating that girl. And, oh, they're changing their gender and, like, all this stuff. And I'm just like, my world opened up.
Yeah.
So I didn't see representation until I got to high school. But in mainstream media, I was looking it up secretly on YouTube.
Yeah, I don't know why I never went to YouTube to look, but I had a guest on here a few weeks ago that said the same thing. Like, YouTube is where they went to search for that. But no, I never did. But that is good. Like, that resource is out there.
Yeah.
For you to get. Now, going more specifically, when was the representation that you've seen of an Asian queer person that's Asian?
Ooh. Oh, man. Queer Asian people. I'm trying to think of my first instance of seeing a queer Asian person. This maybe sounds terrible, but, like, Japanese anime, like, hentai stuff, like, that yaoi stuff, like, especially, like, in-person people didn't know they existed, but, like, when I was, like, I'm a big anime manga person, like,
I seen that, but yeah. I don't know anything about anime, so.
No, but, like, for me, like, that stuff, I was exposed to it, and I was like, oh my gosh, these Japanese people are freaky, like, yeah. But anyway, that was kind of, like, my first exposure to, like, Asian, like, the possibility of Asian queers.
Okay.
Which is kind of bad, but, like, you know, like, that's not the space you should be looking for Asian queers, which is why I think, like, me being an openly Asian queer person in the public, I think it's very important. But I think, man, I'm trying to think. That's a good question, because I'm trying to think, like, who is the first queer Asian person that I've seen? I cannot think, like, mainstream media, I cannot think of anybody. In, like, even, like, in my family, I guess, like, one of my cousins is also gay, but I'm older than him.
And you came out first.
And yeah. I did come out first. So, like, oh, man. I guess I have an older cousin who's gay, but, like, we never talked to him. And it's not, like, because we didn't like him, but, like, we just never talked to him because he kind of, like, did the whole, like, I'm a be by myself kind of thing. But, yeah, I don't know. That's kind of sad. I don't actually know when my first mainstream queer Asian exposure would have been.
Do you have that now? Like, is it out there now? Like, I personally can't think of a mainstream shame one off the top of my head at this moment right now. But do you?
I think, like, okay, like, there's a drag queen named Plastic Tiara, like. They're pretty popular. Who else is queer? Oh, there's a bunch of comedians that are queer and okay. Asian. Like, they're super cool. But that's really it. Man, we gotta step up our game, these Asian people. We got all these queer Black people, queer Hispanic people out there doing the thing. Where are queer Asian people out here, like, representing? We need some more queer Asian people.
One sitting right here on my couch.
Hey, hey, you know, but no, but it's true. Like, where's the representation?
Yeah. And that's why I asked that specific question, because although, like, you see other queer people of color, yeah, that's good to see, but, like, it's different when you see someone who can identify, like, fully like you. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So to get that 100% representation. So that's why I asked that specific question.
Oh, actually, oh my gosh. I just thought about this. Back when I was really young, my parents would like, my grandparents would watch Thai dramas, like Thai dramas from Thailand. They like, there used to be the shop in town that like VHS recorded them from Thailand and like would sell the VHS tapes or like okay. you could rent them. It was wild. Anyway, but on those videos, like they would have like trans like actors, like guys that are like male to female trans people on those tapes. And again, like queerness looks a little different in Thailand and in Laos, but like I guess that would be my first exposure, is like when I was really young, Thai dramas had, they didn't necessarily have gay people, but like when I said that word earlier, katoy is like gay, right? But like they use that like as a blanket term, like katoy is like trans, whatever. But yeah, they, I guess trans people just doing all the trend setting here, but trans Thai women in those Thai dramas, okay. The first experience I would have had seeing a queer person on TV that was Asian.
Nice. Was it in a good representation?
Yeah. Too, they were always funny. They were always like funny. They were always like the comedic relief or like whatever. And again, maybe that's bad because they were the comedic relief, mm-hmm. right? Like they need like, trans people can do serious roles.
Right, yeah.
You know, or like queer people can do serious roles. But I don't know. Yeah. It was always good. Like I never thought of them as bad.
Now you said you're like in a relationship now. Yeah. Is it like fresh in a relationship or?
We've been in a relationship for almost 2 years now. So okay. we'll have started, we started dating in April a couple years ago. But we made it official in like July. So July will be 2 years.
Cool. Now is this a person of color or?
This is a Caucasian male. He's 6'4", Caucasian male. But I mean, I don't know. I kind of fall into that stereotype of if I was a woman, I'd be that Asian girl dating that tall white boy. Like and that's terrible. That's a terrible stereotype to fill. But also like I grew up in Wichita, Kansas, and the pickings, like we talked about, like there are queer people of color in the community, but pickings are slim.
Yeah. And it's still like a lot of them aren't out fully, so it's like finding that someone who is openly out can be difficult in this town specifically. Yeah.
But I love my boyfriend, even though he's white, right? Like he's very cultured, and I'm not trying to say that.
That's good. No, that's good. I feel like if you're gonna date a white person who doesn't identify with your culture, I feel like they have to be okay with learning and navigating that life. So it sounds like
he does a great job, and his backstory is kind of crazy, and we won't get into that, but like he's a very, like, he'll eat everything, he's accepting of all the things, and he's super embracing of the culture, so he's great. I love
him. And you said your family loves him too.
Oh yeah, my family, they love him. So
that's good. That so you're in your home dynamic, you are able to now be your full authentic self. Mm-hmm. And what has that, how has that like helped you navigating this? I ask that because for some people who haven't accepted their family member, friend, whoever it may be, like what did them accepting you do for you?
My family being accepting of me was so liberating in the sense of I didn't have to hide what I was doing, who I was with, who I am to anybody. Mm-hmm. And that was so powerful because I can now, one, I can advocate for other queer people, but LGBTQ, whatever people, but also like my family supporting me allowed me to not sneak around. Like I felt very deceptive growing up because I was like hiding a part of who I was. And deception is not like, it's just like trauma. It's not healthy to like hold in. Like you want to release that somewhere, right? And I think that them opening that space for me allowed me to be who I am and be happy.
Good. And do you feel like, and is your partner's family like okay with your guys' relationship too?
It's so interesting. They are.
Good.
But they're like, his parents are both Mormon. Right?
They're okay with it.
And they are. They're California Mormons. They're built different. but no, they are. And It is the sweetest thing. Like, his whole family, so he grew up Mormon. I said we weren't going to get into it, but he grew up Mormon. He went on a mission, and then he came back and came out.
Wow.
And, you know, like, and that happens to a lot of Mormon people, but, no, his family was very, they're still active members of the church. My boyfriend is not, but they're still active members of the church, but they still support our relationship.
Good.
And they support us, and it's... his whole family, some of them are still in the church, some of them are not, but they're all super supportive of our relationship, and they're some of our biggest cheerleaders, actually. So, but yeah, no, they are, and I love it.
That's awesome. I love that. I love that for you guys. When you said that, I'm like, what?
Yeah. Mormon? They're California Mormons. They're built a little different. They're not these Kansas Mormons, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Nothing against Kansas Mormons, but...
Yeah, but that's really good. That's awesome. I love that. And I love that you're a space maker, that any space that you go to, you're able to be yourself. So that's good. That's like the ultimate goal, like, right? So for a queer person to just be their authentic selves and not have to hide themselves in certain spaces. So that's awesome that you're able to do that. Being the vice president of the Wichita Asian Association, I feel like you just saying that, you being here and someone seeing that, it's like, the culture isn't all like that. Like, how did you even get that spot? Like, what do you have to be, like, nominated by people, or
You get nominated by membership. Like, I was involved with the association. I've been on the board for a couple years before I took this position, and so I was just a board member at large, but just like volunteering with the organization, seeing it around town. Like, that's kind of how I became aware of the association. And then once I served on the board, people were like, oh, you know, like, we want you to be the next president. And so they nominated me, and people voted and said yes, and so here I am.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So, like, people in that space are aware of your identity, and they're welcoming. So it's good to know, like, for other people to know, like, that's a safe space.
Yeah.
And you're going to be the president in a couple years, and you're going to create more of a welcoming space for queer people. So that's awesome.
I'm excited. I think, like, one of our things is to help members become contributing, or like to help people become contributing members of society, like, you know, in the Asian community and within Wichita. And I think that, like, one of those things, like we talked about representation, like me being in the position that I'm in, I'm very fortunate, because it's like I can educate the younger generation on what it's like to live in this queer existence as an Asian person, but then I can also educate the older generation who, mm-hmm. like you said, not everybody is going to be aware. It's not that they don't want to accept their kid, it's that they don't know how.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I can be there to, you know, maybe help navigate.
Yeah, for sure. I just, like, want to thank you for coming on here, joining me on this podcast. Is there any final thoughts that you want to leave the audience with?
I would love to tell everybody to just, like, be authentically yourself. I think it's, you never know who's watching, and you never know who looks up to you. And I think that, especially as queer people of color, for us, it's so important that we are there. We are the people who create space for the future generations to embody themselves and to become who they are and be authentic, to live a happy life.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good final thought. I appreciate that, and I appreciate you coming on here. Like, the representation that you are bringing this platform is different. So, and it's needed from our conversation. Like, it's not really opening out. So, knowing, like I said earlier, the vice president of the Wichita Asian Association is on here, and who is a part of the community, opening doors, creating doors and spaces for queer people is awesome. So thank you for joining me here today.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Queen Talk. Please make sure to like, comment, subscribe, and let us know what you think of this episode. As always, it's been a pleasure. Thank you again, Panya. And remember, as always, you guys, family, friends, strangers, love.